A year ago today, nine miners in Kew Creek, Pennsylvania, cut into an old mine that was flooded with water. For 77 hours, they were trapped underground. While rescue teams worked around the clock, the country held its breath. In the end, hard work, ingenuity, and prayer prevailed.
All nine are alive.
Here's a living example of people working together to save nine precious lives, to make sure that nine families were reunited.
Then Pennsylvania Governor Mark Schweiker announcing the miners' safe recovery and President Bush exalting the rescue effort. Writer Jeff Goodell covered the story last year for CNN.com, spending many weeks in southwestern Pennsylvania with the miners and the rescuers and local townspeople. He also edited the miners' book, miners' stories, into a book. Jeff Goodell recently returned to the area around Kew Creek and wrote the cover story for this Sunday's New York Times Magazine, and he joins us now from Tampa, Florida, and welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you, Neil.
First, the site of the entrapment and the rescue has changed a lot in the past year, hasn't it?
Well, it's changed some, and they're planning to change it a lot more. The farmer who owns the spot where the men were pulled out of the ground has big plans to make a $2.3 million multimedia kind of shrine to this event. The construction is just starting on that now. They're hauling in some bronze statues, and they've planted some nine evergreen trees to symbolize the nine men. But they have plans to keep this alive for a long time.
As you point out in your piece in the Times Magazine, miners have been trapped underground and killed underground for hundreds of years, probably as long as there has been mining. What was it about this moment that made this particular situation such a national crisis?
It was a very, I was at the scene when this was happening, and it was a very strange feeling because, you know, this was less than a year after September 11th, and America was going through, obviously, a very kind of dark time, and Flight 93 had gone down only about 13 miles from the rescue spot, and it was a very odd kind of confluence of feeling that rose up there, and one of the things that struck me that was very moving was after 9/11, when you saw the firefighters and everything searching through the rubble, you know, you saw a lot of men with big machinery, you know, pulling the metal apart and looking for the bodies. And here you had a kind of, in a weird way, a kind of similar replay, just in the sense you had these big machines and these men looking for these men out of the ground. And there was a funny feeling of when they came out alive, of a kind of redemption or a kind of faith restored in something about this country that was very powerful.
Well, that was just a little bit less than a year ago. The nine miners, as you mentioned, became heroes, riding a wave of celebrity and relief and celebration. They were heroes. A year later, how did you find them?
Well, these men I developed a real affection for, and I think it's important to say up front how profound the transformation that they went through was. I mean, we're used to talking about instant celebrity in America with lottery winners or people who do things on game shows or reality shows or whatever, but you know, these guys were guys who worked in the darkness in a mine. Most people in America didn't even know people like this existed anymore, and they come out literally out of the darkness and into the light, bright lights of, you know, thousands of cameras and the attention of the world. And I think it's impossible for anyone besides those nine men to understand how profound of a change they went through. And when I went back, you know, I found them all in various degrees of coming to grips with this. And I think the most, you know, difficult and dangerous thing for these guys, and they know it, is the danger of kind of reliving this moment over and over for the rest of their lives, and how hard it is to put it behind you and say, okay, I'm out, I have a new life, let's move on.
You talked to, I think, all of them at various points in the story, and come to the conclusion that those who seem to be coping with it the best are those who went back to work in the mine.
Well, that's certainly the case in one of the miners, the person who was the crew foreman, Randy Fogel, is an amazing character who loves coal mining. It's been in his family for three or four generations, and he just is a man who loves his work. And you know, you think these guys they got out, they got some money for the book and movie deal. You'd think, oh, they want to put their coal mining behind them and go off and do something else. But in fact, the guy who's in a strange way the happiest is the one who is back in the mine and doing the thing that he loves to do. And that's the case with Randy Fogel.
And with structure in his life. I found that a very interesting perception.
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, the other thing that I mentioned the profound change that these guys went through. I mean, these guys worked 8 to 10 to 12 hours a day, you know, in a very confined environment. They had a job that was very physically required a lot of strength, and there was a real strong camaraderie and then regular hours and all that kind of thing. And one of the difficult things for all these guys coping with all this, besides just the, you know, media people calling them all the time and television cameras and all that, is just the fact that they have all this time now, and their bodies have changed. You know, they've been laboring in the coal mines for some of these guys over 30 years, and now all of a sudden they're basically sitting on the couch and, you know, trying to kind of get over this, and the profound change in their bodies and in just this having all of this time to think about their lives is not always a good thing.
We're speaking with Jeff Goodell about the New York Times Magazine cover story that's coming out this weekend, Who's a Hero Now?, about the miners in Kew Creek, Pennsylvania. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Jeff, your story also focuses on a man who was not a miner but was caught up very much in the story, one of the rescuers, a man named Bob Long.
Mm-hmm. I met Bob Long the day after the rescue. I happened to be at the site and saw him there leaning against his truck when he looked like he'd just taken a shower, and I just went up to him and started talking to him. And it turned out that he was the man who used a global positioning surveying equipment, a very high-tech kind of thing that they use in the military, in the early hours of the rescue to decide where to drill the first air hole that was drilled down. That really was a key moment in saving these guys' lives, because they needed to get to blow air down to them because they were in danger of suffocating before they were in danger of drowning. And getting this hole down there at the right place was very crucial, and he was sort of the man who decided where this hole should be drilled.
In the aftermath of the story, after the miners came out, amid all the celebrity, Disney gave them each $150,000 each to make a film out of their story. You were part of that as the man who also edited their stories into a book. And Bob Long was included in that, in part because Disney thought, well, they tried to preclude anybody else's effort to make a movie or do a book about it from the vantage point of the rescuers, and in fact they did do that. Yet there was great resentment of Bob Long.
There was, and he was resented on both sides. He was resented, the miners didn't really understand why he had gotten the same amount of money as they did, and they were, you know, they weren't unkind to him, except that they were they would question it sometimes, and there was I was around them, and there was some uncomfortableness between them. But I think even more significantly was the other rescuers who didn't quite understand why, you know, there were hundreds of people involved in the rescue, and a lot of people did work for 3 days or 4 days without sleep. And this one guy was the one who was able to get paid for this in the movie and the book deal. And it was extremely difficult position for him to be in, especially in a small town.
For whatever reason, Bob Long commits suicide, and I'll leave readers of your story to follow the very moving description you have of that. I did want to read a passage from your article, though. Vaughn Donaldson, a district chief of the fire department in Midland, Texas, knows very well the stress that traumatic events combined with sudden celebrity can put on people. In the years after the rescue of baby Jessica from the well in Texas, Donaldson watched the man who saved her, Robert O'Donnell, become a national national hero before declining into substance abuse. 7 years after the rescue, he shot himself. There have also been suicides among rescuers at Oklahoma City and the World Trade Center. Quote, whenever you elevate one person as a hero, you necessarily leave others out, and that leads to jealousy and alienation, says Donaldson, who speaks to fire and police departments all over the country. It sounds petty, but it can be tremendously stressful and damaging. That's a sad conclusion.
It is a sad conclusion. And it's, you know, a sad confluence of events. When I learned that he was included in the deal, I was very happy for him. I thought he was the luckiest guy in Somerset County, Pennsylvania. And to have it come to this was very difficult, especially since I got to know him a little bit and, had seen him right after the rescue. And it was a very sad thing.
If media coverage was part of the problem, how I wonder how you reconcile your own role in this.
Well, I mean, that was in part my motivation to do the story, partly. I think that, the odd thing in this case is that it wasn't like Disney or anyone involved in the project, to my knowledge, did anything unethical. It was in a strange way a result of good fortune of Bob Long's. It wasn't that he was... I mean, there was a newspaper article that was published that he had said misquoted him. Only he and the reporter involved actually know that. But it was really more. I ended up not to downplay my own role or anything, but I really can't think it really came down to more about the difficulty of dealing with this kind of fortune, good or bad, in a small town where everyone knows you and you know everyone, and it's very difficult to have any kind of anonymity.
Jeff Goodell, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jeff Goodell, a frequent contributor to the New York Times Magazine and author of this coming Sunday's cover story about the Kew Creek Miners. It's called Who's a Hero Now? Jeff Goodell joined us from Tampa, Florida. In Washington, I'm Neil Conan, NPR News.